Tonight's top story is Iranian president lauds the country's scientific breakthrough. Iran says we'll pursue national interests in line with commitment to international conventions. Iran sends humanitarian aid for ethnic Muslims in Myanmar. People in Bahrain stage fresh protests amid crackdown by Saudi-backed regime forces. And Russia hits out at the US for blaming Syria for blasts, calling the US claims blasphemous. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, hello and welcome. I'm Ali Reza Madadi with the latest coming to you live from Tehran. First of all, the Iranian president says the country will soon break new grounds in various fields of science and technology. Speaking at a ceremony to inaugurate 8 indigenous biotechnological achievements in Tehran, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad pointed to the ever-accelerating progress of technology in Iran, saying that the country will conquer new peaks. He said final products of scientific advancements should be reflected in everyday life of the Iranian nation. He also called on Iranian experts to put their expertise at the service of the Iranians and the international community. He also urged officials at the Iranian universities, research centers, and science and technology department of the presidential office to firmly support Iranian specialists. Now, Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic will pursue its national interests in line with commitment to international conventions and treaties. Addressing a national meeting on the legal regime of the Caspian Sea, Ali Akbar Salehi said such commitment is among Iran's absolute principles in the field of foreign policy, and the maintenance of national sovereignty is also carried out in line with these treaties. He said Iran is among the few countries in the world that have numerous neighbors, adding that Tehran is seeking to achieve convergence with its neighboring states and remove possible differences with them. Saleh also pointed to the bullying powers' pressures on Iran and expressed confidence that the Islamic Republic will manage to withstand international pressures in the near future. Now, Iran's consignment for humanitarian aid for ethnic Muslims in Myanmar has been delivered to the refugees in the country. The shipment includes foodstuff, tents, blankets, and other basic commodities, and was distributed among the Muslims following the arrival of Iran's parliamentary delegation in the city of Sitwa in the western state of Rakhine. The Iranian parliamentary delegation, led by deputy head of Iran's Majlis National Security and Foreign Policy Committee, Mansour Haqiqatpour, arrived in Myanmar on Tuesday. Some 800,000 Rohingyas are deprived of citizenship rights and suffer from a policy of discrimination that has denied them the right of naturalization. This policy made them vulnerable to acts of violence and prosecution. Hundreds of Rohingyas are believed to have been killed and thousands displaced in attacks by Buddhist extremists. Now, people in Bahrain have staged a fresh protest south of Manama amid a heavy-handed crackdown by Saudi-backed regime forces. The demonstration took place on Thursday in the village of Sitra, where protesters took to the streets chanting slogans against the ruling Al Khalifa family. On Wednesday, similar demonstrations were held in several towns and villages where protesters called for the immediate release of all political prisoners. Scores of people have been killed and many more arrested by Bahraini regime forces since protests erupted in the country in early 2011. Despite the foreign-backed clampdown, the Bahraini regime has failed to stop the demonstrations that continue on an almost daily basis. Zionist regime forces have dismantled a tent camp that was set up by Palestinians in the occupied West Bank in protest against the Tel Aviv regime's plans to construct a large settlement in the area. Sources said the forces dismantled the 24 tents in the encampment during the night raid. The move came a day after a Zionist court issued a ruling that permitted Tel Aviv regime forces to remove the tents set up at the so-called E1 area near Holy Al-Quds. The Palestinians had received the court's temporary injunction, allowing them to keep the encampment. However, Zionist Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called for the decision to be reversed. Elsewhere in the Middle East, at least 4 Afghan civilians, including 2 children, have been killed by U.S. forces in the western province of Herat. 2 women and 2 children were killed after American forces opened fire on them in Xinda district of Herat province. The U.S. military has confirmed the incident but claimed that the victims were militants. Local officials have strongly condemned the attack. Civilian casualties inflicted by U.S.-led troops have increased anti-American sentiments in Afghanistan. The deaths have also been the main source of friction between Kabul and Washington over the past years. And before we continue, here's a recap of our top stories. Iranian president lauds the country's scientific breakthrough. Iran says will pursue national interests in line with commitment to international conventions. Iran sends humanitarian aid for ethnic Muslims in Myanmar. People in Bahrain stage fresh protests amid crackdown by Saudi-backed regime forces. And Russia hits out at the U.S. for blaming Syria for blasts, calling the U.S. claims blasphemous. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov hit out at the U.S. for blaming Syria for blasts, calling the U.S. claims blasphemous. Speaking at a news conference in the capital of Tajikistan, Dushanbe, on Thursday, Lavrov dismissed accusations that bomb attacks on Aleppo University were staged by pro-government Syrian forces. Lavrov also said that he thinks that the Swiss initiative to pass the Syrian dossier to the International Criminal Court is premature. No one has claimed responsibility for the blast, but the government and rebels have blamed each other.
How can a terrorist act become a reason of dispute between Moscow and Washington or between anybody else? A terrorist act is a terrorist act. That is precisely how it has been characterized by all serious political leaders, including the leadership of the United Nations. Yesterday on CNN, I heard a semi-neutral reference that it is not ruled out that this terrorist act could have been conducted by Syrian government forces themselves. Cannot imagine any bigger blasphemy, especially from such a rather respected television channel. We have to ask ourselves a question. What is the most important thing for us? If the most important thing for us is to punish somebody, to eliminate somebody, or to judge somebody, then that's one thing. And this includes the calls to hand over the dossier to the International Criminal Court. If the most important thing for us is to stop the violence, then I would concentrate on actions related to that. The rest can wait, including the justice that obviously has to prevail in relation to all who infringed the international humanitarian law and who severely violated human rights.
A series of massive bombings and shootings in Iraq on Thursday killed at least 23 people and wounded some 113 others. The deadliest attack occurred in the town of Al-Dujail, near Iraqi capital of Baghdad, when twin car bombings struck Shia pilgrims outside a mosque, killing up to 9 people and wounding 81 others. The attackers followed an old tactic, which creates an initial explosion to attract security forces and people to the site of the blast, and minutes later sets off another blast. Meanwhile, at least 5 people were killed and 10 wounded when another car bomb exploded near Al-Basim football stadium in the Babil province. Another car bomb detonated at the parking lot near a Shia holy city, just north of the holy city of Karbala. The blast killed a civilian and wounded 17 others, including 4 Pakistani pilgrims. In the province of Diyala, 3 people were killed and 2 wounded in 3 roadside bomb explosions. In addition, 2 people were also killed and 3 wounded in a roadside bomb explosion in the district of Al-Husseiniya in Baghdad. Moving on, India and Pakistan have agreed on a ceasefire to halt cross-border fightings over Kashmir following recent deadly clashes in the disputed region. The ceasefire took hold on Thursday in the disputed Kashmir region after Pakistani Foreign Minister Hinara Banikar appealed for talks with her Indian counterpart to help defuse tensions. 3 Pakistani soldiers and 2 Indian troops have been killed along the de facto border known as the line of control since January 6th. India says one of its 2 soldiers was beheaded. Kashmir lies at the heart of more than 60 years of hostility between India and Pakistan. Both countries claim the region in full, but each only has control over a section of the territory. Now, some 34 Westerners and 15 kidnappers have been reportedly killed after the Algerian army conducted air raids on the African countries in Amnas gas facility. The attack came as kidnappers were trying to move their hostages and vehicles to a new location. The militants in Algeria had earlier claimed to be holding 41 foreign employees of the Desert Gas Complex hostage at the site, but had suggested that they were ready to negotiate if the army withdrew from the area. This is why local officials announced that 140 out of the 180 Algerians kidnapped had managed to escape. Kidnappers said their hostage-taking is in response to France's intervention in Mali's internal affairs and demanded an immediate end to the military offensive. Dozens of foreigners, including nationals from the U.S., Britain, Norway, France, Japan, are among the hostages. The Algerian authorities have by now provided neither the number of people being held hostage nor the death toll of the rescue operations. In Europe, the Greek finance minister says economic indicators show an optimistic picture, even if this is the beginning of another tough year. The finance minister said Greece could beat its budget targets in 2013 and may finally see a primary surplus. He added that despite the optimism, Greeks who have been enduring the harsh pain of austerity for more than 2 years would need more patience before things turn around.
Yes, the worst is over, but we haven't finished yet. We're just in the beginning. We have made an important step towards saving Greece from exit, from Euro exit, but still 2013 is going to be a difficult year. But we see light at the end of the tunnel now. We see certain leading indicators which create optimism. The current account, there's a huge adjustment in the current account through exports mostly. Exports have become the miracle result of 2012. If we are according to targets, then in 2013, the current account deficit, properly adjusted, might be close to balance for the first time in 30 years. It might be that in 2013, we'll finally come up with a primary surplus instead of a zero primary deficit. And this is good because if this happens, there's an agreement in the Eurogroup that there's going to be further cuts in Greece's public debt by our peers. Growth on a quarterly basis, I see towards the end of the present year.
Meanwhile, the International Monetary Fund Managing Director has urged European Central Bank to keep its monetary policy loose. IMF chief said on Thursday that world leaders have avoided economic collapse in many parts of the globe, but need to follow through with policies to avoid exacerbating uncertainty.
Clearly, the collapse has been avoided in many corners of the world thanks to policies that were decided quite often by central bankers, often eventually by government authorities, particularly in the advanced economies. Whether you look at the Eurozone or whether you look at the United States of America, although often at the last hour, the right decisions have been made, and as a result, the collapse has been avoided. Our sense is that there is still a lot of work to be done, and I'll come to that in a second, which is why we should avoid the relapse and make sure that none of the decision makers and none of the authorities actually relax, assuming that because there is a bit of recovery in sight and because the markets in particular have clearly anticipated good news, it's time to just slow down, slow the pace, and go back to business as usual. Spending cuts are necessary, it's obvious. They should be anchored in the medium term. They should be sufficiently solid as to remove the uncertainty around them. And they should clearly touch on entitlement, among other things.
Now, Canadian natives slow traffic on a bridge crucial to U.S.-Canadian trade as Aboriginal people across the country stage a national day of action to protest their living conditions. Hundreds of natives, some wearing colorful dress and banging drums, blocked an access road leading to the Ambassador Bridge, slowing traffic on a major trade artery. Thousands of commercial trucks cross the bridge daily, carrying approximately 25% of the goods traded between the two countries, which form the world's largest trading partnership. Under the banner of Idle No More, native groups promised to hold a series of protests to draw Canada's attention to poor living conditions and high jobless rates facing many of the Canada's 1.2 million natives. Native groups say Canada has ignored treaties signed with British settlers and explorers that they granted native people significant rights over their territory. Well, that's it for me now. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Goodbye.